If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
So I've woken up with a cough, and I'm going to do a test. If I've got COVID again within like 2 weeks of getting COVID, and I will say, apologies to the listeners in advance, I am not going to cut out every time I cough unless I have a big coughing fit. Nate is not here today because he has a cough, but one of us is dedicated to giving you a truly horrible audio experience.
This is Electronic Wireless Show Plague Edition.
Welcome, listener, to this Season 2, Episode 36 of the Electronic Wireless Show, Rock, Paper, Shotguns, PC Gaming Podcast, and the only podcast you need, in my opinion, which is that of the emplagued Alice Bell. And I'm joined today not by Nate, but also not by any of his characters. But I am joined by, as you can hear, James Archer. Hello, James.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay, although I'm feeling a bit left out almost. Maybe a bit of imposter syndrome because I'm not plagued at all currently.
You're not cool enough to have a cough, mate.
Well, evidently not. No, I went to EGX for 4 days, absolutely nothing.
God, bullshit. You must have the constitution of an ox, the immune system of Superman. Well played.
I think it's just like Mr. Burns in The Simpsons in his Three Stooges syndrome, where like all the diseases are trying to get in at once. But my pores and arteries are all clogged up with, you know, Diet Coke and cholesterol.
Oh, good. Well, that's nice.
Well, it's not good, but
I could tie this into our theme, though. I'm going to do an early segue because while you're at EGX, obviously you were surrounded by lots of video game fans, and today we're going to talk about some fan work video games. How's about that?
Oh, that's sick.
Come on.
That was nice. Fair play. See, we don't need Nate.
Yeah, so this week, Edwin on RPS, he highlighted, who is our news editor, Edwin highlighted a game called Fraser Fantasy, which is a free in-browser RPG about being Fraser Crane in his apartment, trying to get everyone out of the house so he can have a nice dinner with his new Mother of Pearl dinner set. And he's also missing the grape scissors, which Niles has, and is very good. Did you play it, James?
No, I have not played it. But please, like pitch it to me. Explain why I should play it.
Because it's an RPG where you play Fraser Crane from the hit sitcom Fraser, and it styles the opening title screen as the Final Fantasy title screen. So it does sort of off-centered skyline of Seattle, and then like a little blimp flies into the town. It's very good. And you had to get your dad to leave the apartment. You have to find 3 folios for it. You have to do little quests. It's really detailed. It's very good. We'll obviously link to it.
Can you make a party with a?
I didn't play enough of it, but friends. I don't think so now. Oh. It's designed to resemble a Game Boy Color game, but apparently it is a Game Boy Color game, and it runs on the retro handheld Analog Pocket, so you can play it if you have one of those. Along the way, you'll have a staring contest with Eddie the dog. Brackets. Eddie's gaze follows like Corbett's The Desperate Man, and use Freudian slaps and unkind assessments of Star Trek to get the better of your radio show's delusional TA. It's a very much one reference per line, scene, or interaction. I won't spoil anymore. If you're big on Fraser, you'll likely love it. It's very sweet. I like it a lot. And
yeah. It's stuff like this shows just complete and utter devotion to the bit.
Mm. Have you ever been that devoted to a bit in your life?
Absolutely not. No way. there may have been times where I thought I was, but in comparison to the dedication required to make a video game, which, as we know, is something that is a load of tedious programming bullshit. Pales in comparison.
Oh, mate, I tried to make a Twine game once. I gave up after about 3 hours. Awful. I couldn't do it. Shout out to all the devs listening. Your heroes, each and every one.
So I tried making just like a maze game in Game Maker 7 once. there was a bug where like all the enemies would just sometimes... I had them like bouncing around inside the maze, and you had to like dodge them. They would sometimes bounce so fast, like they'd gain velocity until they just like flew off the screen.
That's amazing. That's the best game ever. What are you talking about? Release it. Release the Archer Cut. Well, I'm sorry to hear you've never been that dedicated to anything. Sucks for your girlfriend when she listens to this episode of the podcast. Although, sorry, that would mean that your relationship is like a bit you're doing.
It's a bit. Yeah.
Just as a good hilarious one. Joke.
Nah.
There are some other sort of more high profile, I say high profile, some other fan work games that I've enjoyed. There's the Kevin Costner's Waterworld one, which, do you remember that one, James?
From The Simpsons.
Yeah, so
you actually play it with like Milhouse's hands on the screen, right? Like
you do. It's great. Yeah. So it's a recreation of Milhouse playing the arcade cabinet game Kevin Costner's Waterworld, and it's one hit die, and it's really typical. And you have to every time you die, you have to put in 40 cores.
Oh, it's yeah. Really good. Oh, there's a screenshot of the quarter putting in a mini game.
Yeah, like, you don't, in fairness, after the. Basically, it maintains the joke for like the first couple of times you die, I think, and then after that, it just lets you restart. it's very good. And it's basically a rhythm game. It's about timing. You have to like step forward, stab, step out of the way, and stuff. It's good. And I do recommend it. And again, yeah, huge dedication to the bit. Do you have a favourite Simpsons joke, James, that you reference all the time?
Oh.
Because in my experience, everyone has sort of one or two that when they think of The Simpsons, that's their kind of go-to Simpsons bit.
Oh, man. I'm a big fan of Not the Sky, That's Where Clouds Are Born. but I don't have many opportunities to use it because I rarely see people threatening the sky. Well, pollution, I guess.
I really like the episode with Hank Scorpio where they move and Bart goes to school, and one of the kids in the class he gets put in. They all talk about why they've been moved into that class. And one of them just goes, "I start fires," which obviously I cannot say. But I also really like, there's a joke in that I've seen people debate about, where Hank Scorpio turns up and he was like, "You don't like these shoes? Neither do I. Get the hell out of here!" And then he throws the shoes away. And then Homer goes, have you ever seen a, say goodbye, seen a guy say goodbye to a shoe? And Homer goes, yes, once. I think when he says that, he is referring to the instance he has just seen where Hank Scorpio has just said goodbye to his shoe. But other people think he has seen someone say goodbye to a shoe before.
That's a point of debate. Okay. Yeah.
There you go. That's some brilliant radio for the listeners out there.
Actually, there's a very quick Bart one I like when I think someone, a teacher asks him, it might be from the same episode, actually. Like, a teacher asks him, do you know, like, the multiplication table? And he goes, I know of them. Which is something I say whenever someone asks me about something I have heard of but don't understand.
And the teacher also says, do you know cursive? And he goes, I know hell, damn. It's a great episode.
Yeah, evidently.
People have said The Simpsons is good again, but I don't believe them. I'm not going back. Anyway, the another one is the Journey to the Center of Hawkthorne game, which is another recreation of a game from a TV show, which is, there's an episode of Community where Pierce Hawthorne, who is a rich guy played by Chevy Chase, who has an awful dad, makes him, like, he dies, and to get his inheritance, Pierce has to play a video game and win it, and if one of his friends wins it, they get the inheritance. And
okay. They
like, this recreation has done, like, quite a lot of the game, and it's kind of an 80s, it's 2D platforming, you know, the whole thing, and it's quite impressive, like, as a fan work. I think it's not being updated anymore, they stopped updating it a few years ago, but that's worth checking out as well if you're a Community fan, although yeah. It is basically one big reference, so it's probably not enjoyable if you're not a Community fan.
Yeah, I'm neither of those things. Well, it's all right. I've seen some clips.
There you go.
Yeah, I like how on the website they've got, like, all the sprites.
Yeah.
And
some of these are
really good. Like the boss turkey.
That's
some dope pixel art.
I should say that part of the framing for Pierce's dad is extremely racist, so you have to fight some jive turkeys, and that boss is the boss of the turkeys. It's honestly a very good episode. You should watch Community, James. It's very good.
I probably should. I know.
It's one of those ones.
Many TV shows that I should watch, but there's just, like, when you like stop and think about how much,
I know,
like, how many hours you'd have to put in to watch a series that is, like, essentially started and finished without you, you know, without you getting on it at any point. It's just like, oh my god, I can't do that. I really watch Barry.
Oh yeah,
with Bill Hader, because that looks so good. And, like, I've seen clips, and what I've seen of it is absolutely hilarious. But when it comes to sitting down and watching, I'm just like, man, I don't know. It's like four, five seasons.
It starts off as more of a comedy, and then it becomes like a heartbreaking drama, basically, as it goes along. It stealths, yeah, becoming, like, quite serious and really good. And Bill Hader directed a lot of it as well. Yeah. It was very good. But that's why I don't understand when people say, like, oh, I couldn't retire, I'd be so bored. Just watch Netflix until your brain turns into cheese. Like, so many hours of entertainment. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You could go for a walk sometimes, I guess. But, like, just watching every TV show ever would fill up so many lives. I just watch YouTube videos about TV shows, so that's worse. I'm the worst sort of human.
Well, I'll watch Community in, I guess, what, 45 years, maybe?
And, yeah, go for it.
And if this game is still being hosted somewhere,
then you'll get it.
I'll give it a crack, yeah.
One fan work that does not exist, but sort of everyone kind of willed that it would, is the Seinfeld point and click game. It's not happening, probably, but the GIFs are very cool. It was a point and click of Seinfeld, that's what it sounds like, but obviously Seinfeld is owned by a company, and the developers wanted to make this like an actual thing, so they were sort of crowdfunding to get the rights holders' attention so they could make an official Seinfeld video game, which I believe is not happening or likely to happen. Yeah, but looks very good and really fun. And sometimes it's just nice to see these GIFs of stuff and be like, oh, what if, you know, yeah, Seinfeld was a video game. Yeah. It's cute. I like it a lot. There's also a Twin Peaks fan game. I don't understand Twin Peaks. I've never watched any Twin Peaks. I've only got a vague grasp of what Twin Peaks is. And I know when I can recognize when something is trying to be like Twin Peaksian, basically. Like, I know when something's trying to have that vibe. But do you know what Twin Peaks is, James?
I know enough about Twin Peaks to know that it is like good game fodder, because it's just so odd. And can therefore go into weird places and, you know, take advantage of the, I don't know how to put this. Take advantage of like the physical like reality warping stuff that you can do in games, which is like extremely difficult to do in live action.
That's a good point. But I would have thought it would. My understanding of it is that it gets so strange it will turn out like one of those weird 90s point and click adventures where it's just like you use statue on sugar and like it makes no sense and it's, you know, partially live action, that kind of thing. I don't know. But I really like fan works. Is there any other fan work stuff that you like, James? Because I know there's lots of remaster and unofficial things like that.
Actually, speaking about The Simpsons, this reminded me that someone actually made Lee Carvallo's putting challenge.
Did they?
It's on Itch, yeah. By a... where are the credits on this? By Aaron Demeter. That's and yeah, it's 12 megabytes, so it's not a big download. And yeah, you can putt in it.
Is it
as
just
coached by Lee Carvallo?
And it's just putting.
Well, it is a putting challenge.
Sorry, you're right. Yeah, that's
presumably you can select a free wood and do a power drive, like in the show.
Well, one would hope.
Yeah.
Do you know? Alice O actually is, hopefully by the time you read this, the first one will be up, but Alice O has been watching every terrible police procedural show ever conceived by man, because she's doing a series of articles on, like, video games within television shows. And not from the point of view to be like, huh, these games are terrible, but to just be like, what do these games do? What are they saying? Would they be any good? And some of them are super weird. But she's been going through, we've just basically for the last 2 weeks just been getting out of context clips and screenshots of like Law and Order SVU.
my favorite was I can't remember which show it was, but the cop characters burst in, and there's this like decrepit couple playing this like apparently multiplayer game, but it's just, and they're doing like the how to play games on TV thing, where they're like shuffling around in their seats and like bashing 40 buttons every 3 seconds, and then just on the screen is this like awful looking Second Life type thing, where there's just like two people stood stationary on top of a cliff. And one of them's like, yeah, yeah, go, get him, no, go for the left. And they're just, but on the screen, they just stood there. And then I'm just spoiling Alice's articles now, but when they get carried off by the police, it cuts back to the TV. And there's this like horribly modeled child who falls off the cliff. Like, mom, no!
It's very good.
So you're saying that these are like good fodder for real life fan games.
I would love it if someone made any of the games featured in, like, yeah, Law and Order SVU or just any of this stuff. There's an episode of, I think it's Medium or one of the Ghost Whisperer, maybe, where her ghost powers mean she gets sucked into the game. It's great. Amazing stuff. And I love as well the, this is a tangent, but I love when these games try to conceive the kind of culture around video games and how, you know, gamers talk to each other, because always very how do you do, fellow kids. She's a gamer. Stuff like that. At the Elementary, which is the Johnny Lee Miller Sherlock adaptation with Lucy Liu as Watson, has Anonymous in it, but they sort of are called something else, I can't remember. But they do kind of capture that quite well. Like, to get their help, they make, you know, Sherlock has to, like, film himself putting a shoe on his head and all this kind of stuff. So that's kind of closer to the reality of the internet. But
yeah,
look out for Alice's series. I think it's going to be really good. If you were going to make a fan game, like a fan work, James, what would you make it of?
Well, so what I've noticed with a lot of these fan games is they tend to be, they're based on, like, shows or films for adults that are then fired through a more, like, childish prism of, silly gamey stuff. I like to try something in the opposite direction, where you take a show for children and then make it into a more, I don't know, grown up, like, maybe, I don't know, I don't want to sound like, oh, I'm so like fucked up and weird, but I don't know, maybe something like a Drake and Josh psychological horror game. take the innocence of childhood and put it through the game mill until it resembles something, I don't know.
Unnerving
and horrible.
That's like, there's a really good SpongeBob SquarePants webcomic about Patrick taking revenge on and eating everyone, because there's a Patrick clone that is kept in the back of the Mr. Krabs burger, and like the Krabby Patties are all like thin slices of a starfish's arms, and it's a Patrick clone. It's good. It's really good. It's really horrible. That's a great one. Are you sort of thinking like Nickelodeon, Cartoon Network kind of side of things?
Yeah. Actually, oh god, you just reminded me that I have played a quite fucked up SpongeBob fan game.
Have you?
I can't remember the name of it, but you basically play as I believe like a meth addicted SpongeBob, and your goal is you explore Bikini Bottom, doing jobs for people who in turn give you meth.
Sure, yeah.
And it ends with, like, a boss fight against Plankton, and it ends on, like, a coin flip. And if you win the coin flip, then you complete the game. But if you lose the coin flip, then the game crashes.
Oh my god!
It's terrible and, like, slapdash in that way. But
that's great.
The reason I remember it so vividly is because I first played it during. I attempted to do a 24-hour like gaming live stream. It was on my 30th birthday, and this was like during the first COVID lockdown.
So
I thought I'll do something like I can't see anyone, but I'll try and do like something constructive with my time. So I did like a charity live stream. Where I just played a bunch of games for I made about 21 hours, and then my body like collapsed, so I had to give up. But so I remember playing the SpongeBob game at about 1 in the morning, having and the this sounds so stupid like talking about, but something I thought it would be fun to do would be like stretch goals for the amount of money I raised.
Yeah.
And I said for one of them, like, oh, if we get like £500 or something, then I'll eat a Scotch bonnet pepper.
Why?
which we did, and then so I had to eat the Scotch bonnet pepper. And
how was it?
Hot.
Sure. Yeah. And, cool.
But then to soothe my tongue during that, I drank like a pint and a half of milk very, very quickly, which then produced its own problems. Because the human body, it turns out, is not meant to drink that much milk that quickly. So I was playing this like intentionally fucked up SpongeBob fan game at like 1 in the morning with a burning tongue and like milk sickness. I remember like not like barely being able to sit up because the combination of the physical stress and like the visual like the very very awful visual stimulation I was seeing on my screen was just it's too much.
It sounded like you were diagnosed by an apothecary in the Middle Ages who were like, he's got the burning tongue and the milk sickness, my lord. This child won't last the night.
Give him the SpongeBob fan game therapy.
Give him the SpongeBob. Oh, God, I could do with some kind of remedy right now. I have never experienced a fan game quite so terrifying. I do like all the remasters that are being done, particularly with, like, EA Star Wars games, but and I like those sort of collective projects, like you know, Morrowind and Skyrim and stuff that people do. Yeah. I think it's great.
Yeah, I love that stuff.
I think I would make, I don't know, I would say I would love to make one of the terrible police procedural games shows into a game, but most of them already are, and they're terrible. They're really bad games. I was playing, actually, after work yesterday, I played Cartoon Network's Cartoon Summer Resort, which was a four-part Flash game from, like, 25 years ago or something. Like, 2000. And it was a little Flash game about all the characters from, like, Cartoon Network cartoons going on holiday together, and you had to go around and collect stuff. It was just, like, you know, like, Cow from Cow and Chicken wanted a cat, so you had to go get a cat from, you know, someone else. Courage the Cowardly Dog was hiding somewhere, and he'd tell you that, like, there was a key behind Johnny Bravo's hut. It was just, like, walking around, really loud music. It was great, though. I played it so much at school, because we'd spend every break trying to get to the end of the first episode, because obviously it didn't save, so every time you closed the browser, that was it. Just playing the first
But it's
bit
not
over
it's
over
not
again.
Called Cartoon it's not called Cartoon Network Beach Resort, it's called Cartoon.
Yeah, it's weird. I think it's from when Cartoon Network had a separate branding bit. Very weird. It's great though. I will link, because you can still play it in some Flash archival sites, so I'll find a link if anyone wants to listen to extremely repetitive Tropicana adjacent music for 40 minutes. Love it. So I was trying to think, what would I make a fan work of? And I think I'm going to be a loser and say a book. And I think Stuart Turton, because he used to work in video games journalism briefly. Turton's books translate quite well to being quite gamey. And he's done one that's a bit like The Sexy Brutale called The Seven Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle. And every time you die, you then inhabit a different character. Every time you die or go unconscious, you inhabit a different character in this murder mystery mansion and have to try and achieve different things. I think that would be a banging video game.
So it's like it could be like a point and click crossed with Watch Dogs Legion.
Indeed, yeah. Who wouldn't want to play that? It's a license to print money.
Yeah. Well, speaking of licenses, like that's the big barrier, right?
It's
like,
yeah. Yeah. What do you think? It's sort of adjacent to stuff we talked about before, where, like, you know, the guy who made Fables just has declared that Fables is open license now, so you can make, you know, a Wolf Among Us game. I haven't checked in on the legalities of that. But do you think fans should just be allowed to do whatever as long as they're not monetizing it?
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
Me too, like, I think. Literally,
why not?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the argument would be, like, you might get some horrible pornography games with, like, you know, disgusting stuff going on.
I suppose,
like, Fox wouldn't, like, you know, Lisa Simpson spewing racist diatribes in a fan work kind of thing. But generally, I think, yeah?
Yeah. Do you know the Toho games? The Toho Project?
No.
So this is a series of shmup games made by a single Japanese guy who goes by Zun, and they are like I don't know if they're like incredibly popular sales wise, but like culturally they're super popular in terms of they spawn an absolute ton of like fan art and like fan music remixes and, you know, fan games as well. And basically you're like anyone is allowed to make fan-made Toho stuff and sometimes even sell it. There's just like guidelines. So like you can't you need to like make it clear that your Toho fan work is a fan work. You can't make anything that would quote means to harm Toho Project's reputation, or anything that I guess like simultaneously infringes on another intellectual property. So I guess you can't make a fan game where it has like Toho characters punching, I don't know, Fraser. I think that's super cool. You just have like some rules or guidelines saying like don't be a knob, basically. But then as long as you like stick to those, then you can make whatever and, you know, even sell whatever as long as it's not causing material or I guess moral harm to the parent.
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm okay. Yeah, that's good. Do that, everyone. Yeah. That's great. Let's move on to talk about games that don't exist. And talk about games that do and that we've been playing this week.
So, I'm not going to say I've played Cities Skylines 2. I have spent time within Cities Skylines 2 with infinite money and all the buildings unlocked.
Oh, nice, okay.
Basically, so I just whacked down a big enough town in as little time as possible that I could then use for benchmarking purposes. Get all the essentials in, you know. So it has a school, it has a sewage works, has a prison. They're all next to each other, and they're all running off a single electricity cable, but they are there.
Perfect.
So, I'm not gonna critique City Skylines 2 because I'm playing it incorrectly.
You're a great mayor.
I have been trying to more thoroughly play Alan Wake 2. Which should be freshly unembargoed by the time this episode goes out. It's quite good. I respect the fact that they're going more survival horror, sometimes psychological horror, with this one. Horror is much more of a hard sell than just making it action-adventure, like the first one. It's usually more eerie than scary, but I have been successfully spooked on at least a couple of occasions. And even when I haven't, it's still like very, very atmospheric and successful in creating that mood. So, you know, respect to that. What I don't think works, or at least doesn't work for me, is the detective aspect. So,
okay,
both the playable characters, you switch between Alan Wake and who's now a disheveled like Jared Leto impersonator, and FBI agent lady. Both of them have mind palaces, which you can
love that. Which you can enter
like at any time, mm-hmm. and it takes the form of an actual room that you walk around in, like it's a proper 3D space. And in these mind palaces are like evidence boards where you, or like chalkboards where you pit, where you create these like flow charts and string charts made up of bits of evidence, or in Alan's case, little written story fragments. And then you turn those into a chart, and then that's kind of like what advances the game, like, because you have to piecing stuff together. But I don't really see the point of it, because the evidence that you have to go in and manually pin to these boards are basically just little recaps of things that you've already seen and experienced firsthand, and any developments or like revelations from those moments are already quite clear and apparent when you pick them up. So like when you're playing as Saga, who's the FBI agent, you keep finding pages of a manuscript written by Alan Wake that's narrating what's happening to you. And it's like, whoa, spooky.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of like the first game, yeah.
And in one bit early on, you need to track down basically an escaped zombie. This big old undead lad who's attacked you and then wandered off. And in the same room where he vanishes, you find one of these manuscript pages. And you pick it up, and it has Alan Wake narrate something to the effect of, the zombie went to the lake. So you're like, okay, I need to go to the lake. But to actually advance the game, and even unlock the doors to the room that you are in, you need to enter the mind palace, and then manually pin this note, which says, he went to the lake, upon which Saga will monologue, my god, he went to the lake. So the whole thing is less like detective work, and more like, I don't know, a report. It's like, what I did during my summer, I chased a zombie to the lake.
That feels like, do you know that clip that was going around from the latest Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom, and it was like contrasting someone solving one of the puzzles by like building a machine to sweep all of these weighted balls into the other side of the chamber with this fucking idiot YouTuber who picks up the balls one by one. This feels like stuff like that is a concession to that sort of gamer. Like, I'm sorry, but fucking pay attention to the thing in front of you. Like, I know we all have destroyed our attention spans from video games, but you should be able to intuit that you're supposed to go to the lake if you're directly told that you should go to the lake without having to do a little mini game that then reinforces the lake thing, gives you a little lake marker. Like, if anyone plays that bit of the game and they couldn't figure out to go to the lake, and then they spent the rest of the game running around for like hours being like, I don't know where I have to go next, that's their fucking fault. Sorry.
Well, you'd be stuck in the room. You're literally stuck in the room. In this like particular instance, you are trapped in a tiny room.
No, until, I mean, they should just give. They should, you can figure they should it give out. You that bit of paper, and like just unlock the doors, and then she can say to herself, "Okay, you know," because even like they narrate. Video game characters narrate what they do all the time now, so she probably would say, "You know, fucking, I guess I need to go to the lake." And if you don't then go to the lake, that's on you. don't fucking baby players, because it just crushes everything into the sort of lowest denominator soup of mediocrity that AAA games are becoming. No. Give us some fucking credit.
Well, I'm obviously not that into this particular mechanic, but I am interested in playing more Alan Wake 2, because it does have a strong atmosphere and good mystery vibes. The actual meat of the like survival horror stuff is good. It's quite like Resi 3 remake ish.
Okay.
And it shares a it shares a Remedy game-matic universe with Control, which is low key one of my favorite games.
Control. Control's very good, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm keen to play more. Also, Catherine, who has also been playing it, found in-game a tray of like crisps and breadsticks that are surprisingly similar in packaging design to the ones that Tesco sell here in the UK.
And this, we're currently doing an investigation, are we not?
Yeah, because this tray of snacks is found inside like a nightmare version of New York in a game made by a Finnish development studio. So we're not sure where the Tesco link came from. That's a fun little side mystery that we're keeping an eye on.
Maybe they have Tesco in Finland, I don't know.
Maybe, actually. That would be a disappointingly mundane resolution. Someone's put up the they might have Tesco in Finland sticker on their pinboard.
Yeah, it might have went into my little mind palace there. Oh god, it must take so long. Imagine if to have thoughts, you had to walk around an imaginary room in your head for 3 minutes at a time, and people around you just had to watch you fucking go offline for 3 minutes at a time, and then you were you were like, oh, he's gone to the lake. Jesus, be the worst FBI agent of all time. I've been playing a game that is already out as you listen to this. I've been playing The Lord of the Rings Return to Moria.
Ooh, how is it?
It's sweet. It's really sweet. It's endearing. Aww. It's really? Yeah, because it's, you know, it's janky, but not in like an irreparably broken way, just in quite a nice way, you know? Like,
okay.
It's quite, it's slower paced and more sort of methodical and weighty than, you know, your Valheims or even your Arcs, stuff, you know, like that. It's very like, you know, dwarfs like mining and they like food and you have to
it is like a survival game. It's not a go into a cave and kill a million orcs.
So it's set after the trilogy, and a white bearded old Gimli has decided, you know what, we're taking back Moria, our ancestral homeland, and the door is blocked, so he tries to like blow it open, and that causes a rock fall, and that ends with you being trapped in Moria with friends. You could play it offline, but I would say co-op is recommended, because it's very slow going when you're on your own. And you build, you know, you go deeper into the mines, you're trying to find a way out, and there's goblins around bitching about how they hate orcs. It's pretty funny. And you're obviously underground and in the dark a lot of the time. There's a day and night cycle because there are skylights and things, but it is dark a lot of the time, and there are, you know, at night orcs and monsters and stuff come. And you're supposed to build little camps basically to make yourself safe, and you know, you build food tables, and then you can make stew, and you can, you know, have nice meat and stuff. And it's because of, you know, Moria used to be like a proper dwarven kingdom. You end up, especially early on when you're, you know, you don't have so many resources, you build your camps in old villages and old places that they already have like ruined hearths and forges and stuff, so you can get stuff done quicker. And you know, there are, you know, upstairs rooms that still have beds and things that you end up chopping up to use for wood and stuff like that. It's quite atmospheric and nice. And then it does have some genuine sort of ooh moments where you'll come out into like a cavern that's, you know, partially flooded, and it's got like a little farmhouse almost built in it, and you know, then a bigger cavern that has, you know, it's a sort of secret elven enclave that used to exist in there that has different buildings and stuff. It's really sweet. But it is, yeah, a little bit. So, you know, most survival games, it gives you like quick wins early on.
Yeah.
So you feel like you're making quite a lot of progress quite quickly. And this doesn't really do that. So it's quite, quite slow paced. The map is quite unhelpful. Just in terms of like the scaling of it and sort of knowing which way to go and stuff. And it's supposed to be like safer during the day. It's not really. And it's just little stuff like enemies don't really make noise when they like hit you and attack you, but their feet are really loud because that's how you can tell if an enemy is nearby, like a wolf or a goblin or whatever. And their feet just make a kind of very loud like, no, and also they're not different for different enemies. Like all enemies just kind of go like pip 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 when they walk by. and that's how you know that there's some bad guys there. But then when they actually attack you, it's kind of silent. So that it's really like sweet and like really endearing. The stuff like you can press X to pay respects in this game, because you can find like remains of dwarves and you can pay your respects, and then you get like a little token, like a little statuette thing that you can place at a little remembrance shrine for, and stuff like that. It's just very like
good
vibes.
It's
very sweet. Yeah, it's good vibes. And like when you start mining, you can sing, and there are big like brewing vats to repair and build and stuff. But it's just very slow going and very kind of like incremental gains compared to like some other stuff. Now that might be because I started playing it by myself, and it's definitely harder by yourself.
Have you found people to play with?
So it's not, there isn't online matchmaking. You play with mates, so you hope you get codes to give out. At least that is my understanding of it. I might have completely missed that you can just randomly join a game, but it's much more curated sort of, here is my world, here is my code for my world, if you want to play with me kind of thing. Rather than jump in, jump out sort of stuff. But the character creation is great as well. It's completely like ungendered, and you can, every dwarf can have a beard, or you can just sort of change the bust and the waist, and the faces are there's a selection of faces, and they just have like an adjective attached to them, like craggy or noble, or you know,
or like the seven dwarves
kind of, yeah. so like maybe some of them look more traditionally feminine, and some of them look more traditionally masculine, some of them look older, and some of them look younger, and so it's very a very kind of nice dwarf centric dwarf appropriate, I think, because you know, the dwarfs in most media, the kind of semi joke about it is that like all dwarfs sort of are dwarfs, you know, you can't tell. So that was really nice. It's just a lot of very nice, sweet things about it, but I think it's maybe a little bit too hard, or not too hard, but just like a little bit grindy early on. Okay. I've run out of iron ore, and I can't find any more fucking iron veins. I've got coal up to my arse, but I can't find any iron. Which is difficult because my sword is not looking great. I need to forge a new sword. Dwarf problems, man.
It's a shame that you don't get those little wins. Although an issue I've had with survival games like V Rising is the main one that comes to mind. It's when you first start setting up a base, like it's almost guaranteed to just be a piece of shit. Like it's gonna, like four walls and no roof. But does being able to set up shop in these like old dwarven villages like help that process? Like is it quicker to get something vaguely resembling an actual house or
I reckon so. Yeah.
Okay.
And you can, as you get more confident, you can see, because there are some areas that you go to that are just big open rooms, and you're like, right, so this is if you're playing with like eight people, and you can clear out this whole area, throw some walls and doors up there, you know, reinforce this bit, and then you could fill this place with like hearths and, you know, different forges and, you know, storage and stuff. But I quite like, you know, setting up shop. This like little street, there are four buildings, and I can throw a wall up here and here, put the door in here, there's a if I put the hearth in the middle, then I'll be able to immediately access all this wood stored and stuff, because some of the time you'll come across like a little, you know, village bit, and it'll have loads of wood and stone and stuff and coal already there, which is useful. But it's just a little bit, I think playing on your own especially is hard. And it's slow going sometimes to feel like you're making a lot of progress. But it's very sweet. And I think if you have a gang, if you already have a group of friends that you play stuff like this with, it'll be a lot of fun. But I think it's hard to like meet people through it. Almost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you're kind of selling it to me because I was a bit cold on it before, but then you're making it. I already find like most survival games are, you know, like cold and very like dry and stats heavy. So it would be nice to have something that's a bit more warm hearted and
yeah, that's a really chill, good way of putting it. Yeah,
chill vibes. I already have one dwarf game in my life,
of course, yeah. Magic,
so I might be able to I might be able to recruit some fellow dwarves from that into the mines if I decide to play
it. There you go. Loving it. James, is today a good day to wear hard?
Well, unfortunately, Alice, it's actually been a bit of a bad week.
Week
to wear hard because I'm just gonna talk about the same two games I talked about previously. The two biggest game launches, those this week, that being Cities Skylines 2 and Alan Wake 2, are both super duper brutal on PC hardware. Skylines 2 especially. I tried that on an RTX 4070 Ti, which is a graphics card that's only a few months old and costs nearly £800, and that cannot adequately run on high settings at 1440p.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, so that's not good. What I did find interesting, though, is the different attitudes of the developers of these two games to the issue of performance. Yeah, because Colossal Order, who make Cities, have said, even before launch, like, we know this isn't good enough. It didn't meet our like internal targets. And while we are still releasing it, we're going to work on it with patches. Uh-huh. So it's kind of like they know it's not great, and they're like a bit contrite about it. I'm also paraphrasing, but that's like the gist of what they said. And on the opposite side of that is Remedy, whose communications director Thomas Puha told IGN earlier this month, "I think this discourse about resolutions and frame rates and everything is getting a bit out of hand, and that you should look at the image quality of the game," which are direct quotes and should maybe have been taken as a warning. Yeah.
I get where they're coming from, and I get that, like, you know, you can't optimize for everyone's stuff, but like, it should work for, yeah, like you say, stuff that is like a months old, you know.
Yeah. Like, to be clear, like, Animate 2 is very, very pretty, but it does bring us back to this ongoing issue of whether having marginally better looking games, like more realistic looking games, is worth essentially making it harder or impossible for people with older PCs.
Yeah.
Or let's be honest, like, lower incomes from being able to play
them.
Yeah. Because I've done a bit of testing, and the only way you're going to be able to run Alan Wake 2 if you have like an RTX 2060, which is the graphics card listed in its own minimum requirements, is if you use some kind of upscaling in like super ultra performance mode, which in turn makes everything really blurry, and then makes it hard. That's makes it harder to, you know, just look at the image quality. Like, the okay, but it's the only way I can get it running in the first place is to completely knacker that image quality. It's not really a good system.
Yeah.
I don't like getting all angry gamer about this at all, because ultimately it's not nothing, but there are more important things in the world. But at the same time, we had all these conversations with stuff when stuff like Redfall came out, and that ran like dog. And
one of my favorite games.
Just the situation doesn't seem to be getting any better, which is a bit worrying.
Yeah, I think you, as developers, you can acknowledge that people have concerns about it, and especially like you say, you know, maybe it's gatekeeping, you know, lower income PC gamers from enjoying games in, you know, the way that they could. And yeah, I don't like. You're never going to make a PC game that looks like real life, so it's fine. Like, and also, like, more realism. I've talked about this. I don't know if I talked about it on the podcast, but I talk about it quite a lot. That, like, realism is fine, but it's not, like, an especially artistic choice if you're not like doing anything with it. Like Alan Wake could probably have like some more effective sequences if they are like not real, you know, realistic, and they're a bit kind of, you know, weird and fucked up, and like you know, some of the games that people still really love and love the most are, you know, pursuit of realism is not necessarily a worthy goal anyway, I don't think so.
Yeah, I guess it's a issue of like technical impressiveness versus artistic impressiveness. Was it I'm really sorry, I can't remember if it was you or Alice B who posted that article about this like painter guy.
So Alice O posted an article that was sort of an article about an article. There's a guy called Devin Rodriguez, and it was actually part of the premise of the article was that like he is probably the most famous artist in the world, but you don't know his name. Devin Rodriguez is the guy who does sketches of people on the New York subway on TikTok. And he had his first, you know, show recently. And a guy wrote, I will link the article in the show notes, but a guy wrote a review of it where the review wasn't like horrible. He was just like, yeah, you know, he's obviously a technically talented artist, but there's a long history of people, you know, doing art of people in public transport. And is this really adding anything new? And it was sort of talking about actually his status as a TikTok artist and how that might affect, you know, his work and how we look at his work. And Devin Rodriguez got big mad about it and like sicked his fans and followers on this guy who were all like, would you talk about your son this way and stuff? And like, went properly in, because I guess he'd never been criticized before. So the reviewer wrote a follow-up article about that experience and, you know, about how people consume Devin Rodriguez's art. But anyway, after that we had a discussion and I was like, yeah, I don't think realism, like I don't think this guy is a good artist in the sense that, yeah, he's technically very good, but like, is he saying anything, you know? With is his art like doing anything interesting, you know?
Yeah, and the other thing with like aiming for photorealism is you're probably not ever going to achieve it.
Yeah.
And any like even the smallest like bit where something is clearly not real, like it, like the example given in the Devin Rodriguez article was like someone's hand was a bit too big, and then once you like notice stuff like that, then the whole thing is kind of undermined.
Yeah. So like, ask yourself, you know, remedy is being able to render all the ferns in a forest really helping the message of what you're trying to convey with Alan Wake, you know.
Yeah.
I sound like a dying kind of dowager ranting about modern life.
Stood outside in the mud.
Exactly. Hammering on Sam Lake's door, coughing up blood on his doorstep. That just about does it, I think, for this season 2, episode 36 of the Electronic Wireless Show, where we talked about some cool fan works and other things. And every week, we end the show with a recommendation of something that is not a video game. James, what are you recommending this week? I'm going to guess either some kind of condiment or a band.
No, actually, I'm once again suggesting people get pissed, because I'm recommending...
Ah, booze! Booze is the third one.
I think, like, maybe 1 in 10 of my recommendations on this podcast is related to, alcoholic beverages. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry if you're into this. But yeah, so my recommendation this week is Four Roses Single Barrel Whiskey. I have been on the lookout for whiskey recently because I consumed all of my good scotch, and I have a Halloween party coming up, and was a bit keen also to try a new bourbon. And so on the recommendation of the YouTube channel How to Drink, which is a drinks mixology channel I've enjoyed for some time, I guess you could also count that as a recommendation, I got this bottle of Four Roses Single Barrel, and it's very nice. It has a lovely like caramel smell, and yeah, or like a bit of caramel taste, and is a bit of fruit, and is like spiced but not spicy. Like it doesn't burn you like cheap whiskey does.
Okay.
It's also like it's also not like a crazy expense. It's like I call it lower mid range whiskey, perhaps, which might sound a bit crap, but then, you know, you can spend a lot of money on whiskey. So something that's maybe like 45, 50 quid. I don't feel like I've overspent on this that's this fair. Bourbon. I think it's pretty good.
I am not a spirits drinker, so when you were like, "Oh, it smells a bit caramelly," I was like, "I bet it doesn't. I bet it just smells of booze." I'm going to recommend a novel called We All Want Impossible Things, which is by Catherine Newman. It's quite short. It's about 200 pages. It is... I'm going to describe it, and it's going to sound upsetting, but it's not. It is a story about two middle-aged women who've been best friends for 40 years, and one of them has terminal cancer, and it's the story of the other one looking after her in hospice until she dies. But it's very life-affirming and funny and very sweet and lovely and not kind of sad at all. It's a bit sad, but it's great. So that is We All Want Impossible Things by Catherine Newman. And yeah, nice short read as well if you're fine. If you're in a bit of a book slump, it's a good one to get out of it, I think.
Kickstarter.
Exactly, yeah.
Nice. Okay,
but that just about does it for this episode of the Electronic Wireless Show. We may or may not have one next week because I'm on holiday next week and Nate might not be able to record next week. We will see, but it will be a James and Nate special next week.
I don't think it would just be me shouting into the void.
That'd be good, though. You should just see if you can have a conversation with yourself for an hour, yeah. I'd listen to that. We will definitely be back the week after next, anyway. And we'll probably talk about Halloween-y things, I imagine, at some point. But thank you very much for listening to Season 2, Episode 36 of the Electronic Wireless Show. You can find Rock Paper Shotgun on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Blue Sky, and TikTok. Just all the social medias. Just look for Rock Paper Shotgun. We'll be on most of them, I imagine. You can email the podcast with questions, suggestions, and feedback. Send in some of your favourite fan works that you've spotted around the internet at podcast@rockpapershotgun.com. And you can also discuss all your sorts of favourite video gamey things at the Discord. The link is in the show notes. But for all of your PC gaming needs, just go to www.rockpapershotgun.com. But for now, it's goodbye from me, Alice Bell, and it's goodbye from James Archer.
Goodbye. Thank you.